there might be a light at the end of the tunnel, and it sounds like thousands of years of light at the end of the tunnel.
A new plan for energy generation in South Central Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 9th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Aniak residents honor a gravely ill man who dedicated his life to helping others.
He's been like a strong beam or an anchor for people whose lives are falling apart for various reasons, sometimes self-induced.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Communication Systems. ACS offers high-capacity, high-speed bandwidth for business with speeds up to Gig E, connecting companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. And by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com.
Cook Inlet Regional Incorporated, or CIRI, an Alaska Native corporation, today added another piece to help fill the long-term energy needs of the rail belt. It uses underground coal gasification, or UCG, a technology that turns coal into gas that's ready to pump into the existing energy infrastructure without mining. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
CIRI's Cook Inlet Energy Project has been in the works about a year, and Margie Brown, CIRI's president and CEO, told legislators it came about as a response to concerns about a shortage of Cook Inlet natural gas in the not-too-distant future.
It can harness the energy that is contained in a coal seam and produce electric power and perhaps other value-added products without the negative effects of mining. And that is, I think, a tremendous technology that really deserves to be explored and hopefully brought online.
She said the project is not the silver bullet to solve all the needs of the rail belt, much less the entire state. But she said the project will move the region toward a diverse supply of energy sources and will help loosen the dependence on one fuel source, in which South Central residents now find themselves. It's designed to fit in with CIRI's wind-generating facility on Fire Island and is about the same output as Ormat's plans for a geothermal facility at Mount Spur. Ethan Schutt, CIRI's Senior Vice President for Land and Energy Development, said the process consists of dry wells that inject air into a coal seam below the water supply, where about 20% of it is burned. The combustion is self-contained and gives off no waste. The movement of the heated air across the seam moves synthesis gas, or syngas, out through another well.
Syngas is a valuable energy product which can be used in its simplest form without refinement to generate electricity by burning it through a control-modified natural gas turbine, or it can be upgraded through known and commercially available processes to synthetic natural gas or to clean liquid fuels.
Schutt says CIRI would build its facility on its own land near Beluga, where it would also build a 100-megawatt power plant. The project would also include a carbon capture sequestration element that'll separate the carbon dioxide from the syngas and inject it into Cook Inlet oil fields, helping increase oil production as well as further reducing emissions from the power plant.
You probably know that most of our power generation on the rail belt is old and inefficient. It is not up to modern standards. So a power plant with like our proposed power plant will compare very favorably to the existing infrastructure.
Here are some other facts about the project and process that Schutt explained. UCB has been used safely for many years in China, India, and Australia, with extensive development coming from the former Soviet Union. However, Schutt says that natural gas was found to be much less expensive to develop than a UCG facility. UCG uses pieces of several disciplines to put it all together: physics, geology, hydrogeology, and chemistry. So CIRI has hired a technology provider and the Livermore National Laboratory as an independent consultant. The plan has a long life expectancy. It'll consume less than 3 acres of coal per year. He says that translates into tens of thousands of years of energy available to it. CIRI is not asking for anything from the legislature. No government money is needed for the project. Legislators were extremely positive with the announcement. Senator Lisa McGuire said it's exciting, especially for those who have been worried about the region's dark energy future.
There might be a light at the end of the tunnel, and it sounds like thousands of years of light at the end of the tunnel.
SERI plans to begin test drilling in December with a goal for operating the facility in January 2014. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The Stryker Brigade combat team based out of Fort Wainwright was formally welcomed home at a ceremony in Fairbanks yesterday. The unit recently returned from a year-long deployment to Iraq. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Hundreds of soldiers stood at attention as colors or flags representing the combat team's seven battalions were unfurled, officially signaling the end of the Iraq deployment and return home to Fort Wainwright. Stryker Commander Colonel Bert Thompson recognized the milestone.
On behalf of the warriors and the families of the Arctic Wolves, it is with absolute certainty and with great pride that I report to you two words that in combination is music to every leader's ears, warms his heart, and ignites his warrior spirit, a phrase that is inclusive of nearly 2 years of preparation for and execution of combat operations in Iraq. A phrase that represents the expenditure of a great deal of blood, sweat, tears, and sacrifice by our soldiers, leaders, their families. Gentlemen, I report to you, mission accomplished.
Thompson said the deployment to Diyala province north of Baghdad was a success, both in terms of directed military operations and more general humanitarian outreach.
We put out Al-Qaeda insurgents out of an area that had been infested with insurgents and violent extremists for approximately a four-year period. Multiple brigades attempted it. We planned, prepared, and executed a really doctrinal counterinsurgency operation in South Balad Ruz, where we cleared, we held, and then we built and really increased prosperity to the people that really, really needed it. And I feel most proud about that. But really, it's about what the soldiers did day in and day out.
During the ceremony, U.S. Army Alaska Major General William Troy praised the Strykers, or Arctic Wolves as they're known, for the way they carried out their mission. The Strykers trained and supported Iraqi forces as they oversaw an election and transitioned toward handling their own security. Troy said that'll pay benefits in-country and here at home.
Your superb work for the Iraqi security forces gave them confidence and competence. Their success, in turn, gave the Iraqi people hope. And in the newly discovered hope of the Iraqi people lies the security for the people of the United States. So what I'm telling you is what you did was with the Iraqis, yes, but it wasn't for the Iraqis. It was for us here at home and for our security, and you did it very well.
Colonel Troy, Major Thompson, and Alaska Governor Sean Parnell, who also spoke at the event, thanked service members and their families for hardships endured during the year-long deployment. Parnell offered special words for those killed and injured.
We will remember their selflessness, their sacrifice and courage. And to the wounded warriors and their families, you are in our prayers as you continue in your recovery.
Over 170 Stryker soldiers were injured during the deployment, and 12 in or attached to the unit were killed. The fallen members and a service dog also lost in action were individually recognized during the ceremony as photos of them were displayed on video.
Specialist Heath K. Pickard.
Some soldiers' family members attended the Fairbanks ceremony, including former Governor Sarah Palin, who has a son in the Stryker Brigade. After the ceremony, some soldiers shared stories of their tour in Iraq. Stryker Lieutenant Jacob Cook was in a vehicle that rolled into a water-filled ditch. Cook recounted how his commander, Specialist Ricardo Farrell, saved the Stryker's driver, who was trapped in the front of the vehicle.
Without saying anything, with just extreme courage, selfless service, Specialist Farrell swam through what we call, it's a very tight space in the Stryker, we call it the hell hole. And we had petroleum product, oil, everything else floating in there with the water, and he dove down there, drug him out of the seat, and saved his life. It was the single most heroic thing I've ever seen.
Cook said Farrell was awarded a medal for his actions. Cook and the rest of the 4,000-member Stryker Brigade are headed out on 3 weeks' leave today. That'll be followed by what Commander Thompson called a reset process for soldiers and brigade equipment and a multi-month training period in preparation for deployment to a yet-to-be-determined location in about a year and a half. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a singer-songwriter reflects on simplifying her work.
Now when I write, I try to say something in the easiest way possible, and very matter of fact.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com, and by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski is in a fight with the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA recently opposed a Murkowski-sponsored amendment, which would have weakened the agency's ability to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. Murkowski sent the EPA's administrator a letter this week saying she's extremely disappointed by the way the EPA handled its response to her proposal. Murkowski spokesman Robert Dillon says she tried to get feedback from the EPA during the planning stages to make sure the legislation wouldn't have unintended consequences, but got no response.
Senator Murkowski reached out several times to the EPA while she was drafting her amendment and asked for their input, and they basically ignored her and didn't participate, but yet they had time to reach out to businesses doing business in Alaska and tell them that if this amendment passed, that it could endanger their clean air permits.
The EPA says it contacted Shell Oil Company and an auto industry trade association. It warned Shell that Murkowski's legislation could have unintended consequences for its air permit applications. The company needs the permits in order to move ahead with development in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. This afternoon, EPA Press Secretary Adora Andy released a statement saying her agency is reviewing Murkowski's letter, but that it stands by its belief that her amendment would have had, quote, serious and negative consequences for U.S. businesses and the economy. Murkowski spokesman Robert Dillon says the senator is concerned that the EPA contacted companies rather than Congress.
Senator Murkowski has concern about the appearance of the EPA leaning on businesses that are reliant on EPA clean air permits to conduct business. You know, that may or may not be the case, but that's certainly the appearance, and it's why she's raised some questions about the EPA's tactics.
Murkowski disagrees with the EPA's assessment that her legislation would threaten clean air permits. Her amendment to curb the EPA's ability to regulate greenhouse gases from stationary sources like power plants was shot down by Senate Democrats last month. Murkowski says she plans to try again. One day after the amendment died, the EPA proposed new rules to regulate stationary greenhouse gas emitters. The village of Aniak is celebrating the work of a man that is credited with saving scores of lives. Pete Brown has gained national attention for his work with village youth. He was recently diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and doctors say he only has a short time to live. Shane Iverson from member station KYUK has the story.
The Upper Kuskokwim region is a vast area populated with just a handful of tiny villages. But despite the hundreds of miles that separate the roadless communities, everyone seems to know Pete Brown.
He's touched just about every family in this entire region in one way or the other.
Thomas Brock is Brown's stepbrother. He says Brown has saved more lives than he can count in an area where professional medics are few and far between, and the nearest hospital is over 100 miles away.
Being as well-trained and so experienced in emergency medicine, he's just been able to be there in critical accidents, and when people have been extremely ill, he's been able to help those folks get the time that they needed to get additional critical care that they needed once they got to a hospital.
But what really sets Brown apart for many is his dedication to the youth. He began training Aniak teenagers in emergency medical procedures and volunteer firefighting. The group came to be known as the Dragon Slayers. They now train and respond to emergencies like cardiac arrest, car accidents, and slips through the ice. David LeMaster worked alongside Brown as an emergency medical technician. LeMaster says Brown's teachings went beyond the classroom.
I've seen and I've witnessed
keep literally turning young people, young kids around, pulling them basically out of the jaws of doom, either of alcohol abuse or suicide, and causing them to give it another chance.
Brown and the Dragon Slayers were the focus of a People magazine feature in 2002 titled Heroes Among Us. He was also recognized by Oprah Winfrey when she presented the Dragon Slayers with a donated Land Rover on national television. LeMaster says that several of Brown's students have gone on to professional careers in health. He also says Brown's presence will be greatly missed.
He's been like a strong beam or an anchor for people whose lives are falling apart for various reasons, sometimes self-induced. Basically, when things go to hell, people let out a cry in Antioch, and it's Pete.
Doctors estimate that Brown has a few weeks to a few months left to live. Pete Brown's celebration of life is taking place tonight at the Antioch High School. Organizers say dinner, dancing, and music will highlight the evening. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com. LitSight Alaska is a web community for families, teachers, librarians, health professionals, and Alaskans of all ages. There are thousands of pages with everything from Alaska's digital archives to kids' games, information about the state's history, culture, narrative, and healing. Teachers love LitSight Alaska. You can discover LitSight Alaska at LitSite.org. LitSight Alaska is a project of the University of Alaska Anchorage. This message sponsored by UAA.
A bill that would allow Sea Alaska Native Corporation to select 85,000 acres in the Tongass National Forest had its first hearing yesterday in Washington. It's opposed by environmental groups, including the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Sea Alaska hopes to claim the lands through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA. Corporation board member Byron Malott testified before the Senate Subcommittee on Public Lands and Forests. He emphasized the economic goals of ANCSA and noted this bill would allow Sea Alaska to finalize its land entitlements. Malott sits on the Tongass Futures Roundtable, a group dedicated to working out solutions among the various forest user groups. Malott says concerns first brought up by the roundtable led Sea Alaska to ask for different lands outside the original areas established by ANCSA.
The areas that Sea Alaska, as a consequence, has included in our bill are lands that all have already been harvested, or almost all of which has been previously harvested by the U.S. Forest Service.
Malott warned that not going through with the land conveyance could have economic impacts beyond the corporation. He says in about 2 years, Sea Alaska will have to start winding down its timber operations, which would end payments to a dozen other Native corporations.
Sea Alaska, since its inception of harvest on ANCSA lands, has distributed some $300 million to the other regional corporations, and its loss would be a significant matter both to our survival and to theirs long term.
Environmentalist Bob Klaus traveled from his home in Craig to represent the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, or SEAC. He says the bill would actually harm local businesses like family lodges and tour guides.
This bill allows Sea Alaska to cherry pick the best of the Tongass to the detriment of all other users. Sea Alaska has chosen the most productive, easily accessible timber stands. SEAC supports the microsale timber program on Prince Wales Island and a responsible level of timber harvest to support the small mills there. This bill threatens the ability of those programs to continue.
The Obama administration was represented by the Bureau of Land Management and the Department of Agriculture, which both brought up concerns about the Tongass land conveyance. BLM Deputy Director Marcy Lynn Burke says it could set a bad precedent and cause other corporations to reopen their land claims.
While it is true that Sea Alaska has some unique circumstances, Sea Alaska has had sufficient land selections on file in order to satisfy their entitlements.
That didn't sit well with Senator Lisa Murkowski, who sits on the subcommittee and is sponsoring the land conveyance bill.
Well, would you agree that about 40% of those are underwater, and that a considerable number of those were also locked up or encumbered with these long-term timber contracts until the mid-90s?
Well, I'm not aware of how much of that might be tied up today.
BLM Deputy Director Burke's written testimony also raised concerns that deadlines set out in the land bill would give Sea Alaska preferential treatment and that the bill would remove existing covenants on historic and cemetery sites under ANCSA that restrict activity. Murkowski and Bill co-sponsor Senator Mark Begich say they are not concerned about setting a precedent with the Sea Alaska bill. In Bethel, the city clerk's office is reporting an additional 49 absentee ballots yet to be counted. That moves the number of uncounted ballots from 110 up to 163. That increases the chance that the outcome of Proposition 1 could change. Proposition 1 asked if the city of Bethel should revoke local option and allow alcohol to be unrestricted. Proposition 1 is currently passing with 53% of the vote. To change that outcome, 66% of the uncounted ballots would have to be no votes. The remaining ballots will be tallied Monday. If Proposition 1 passes, it will be the first time in 30 years that alcohol has been unrestricted in the Western Alaska city. A lot of artists find inspiration in Alaska's majestic scenery and wild spaces, but not singer-songwriter Emily Kern. The Anchorage resident says the calm that came with moving so far away from the fast-paced Lower 48 pretty much destroyed her creative streak. But she has written songs since moving north 6 years ago. Her latest CD came out last October, 1 month before her son was born. Kern says motherhood may have opened her heart to finding inspiration in quieter times, but she says she hasn't yet written much about her son.
When I was recording my new album, I'm Just Like You, which I recorded last summer in California, you know, I was pretty far along in my pregnancy. And I had originally gone in planning to do a short album, and I decided to make it a full album and decided I needed a new song or two to put on it. And I was only in the studio for 3 days. So my last morning there, I wrote a song called Let's Make a Baby. Of course, it was after the fact. We had already made the baby. But that's the closest I've come probably to writing a song for him. Do you want to just hear a little bit of it?
I would love to, yeah.
Let's see. Let's make a baby, a little you and me. A little lily gazer who will climb our apple tree with a smile that can warm us like the fire in the stove and chubby cheeks the color of an Appalachian rose. Let's make a baby. So that's the first part of it.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Thank you.
Your lyrics tend to be very intricate and unique. You avoid a lot of cliches that a lot of songwriters fall into. Is that something you consciously work on, or is it just your individual style?
I actually do. It is definitely my style, but I'm aware of it. I think I wasn't aware of it for a long time. And once I, you know what helped me become aware of it is a poet, Billy Collins. He's a huge influence to me because when I discovered his poetry, I realized, and I've never really been a huge fan of poetry because I found that it was always too cliche and it was too sort of just, I mean, it sounds silly, but poetical. Like it was just too out there and you didn't know what they were talking about. And then when I found Billy Collins, his writing is so accessible and clear and just sort of everyday. And I realized, like, that's what I'm going for. And I'd always sort of done that, but he really clarified for me what I'm aiming for. And so now when I write, I try to say something in the easiest way possible and very matter of fact. And I'm not a fan of cliche or easy turns of phrases that you expect.
What was it like to open for Dar Williams recently here in Anchorage?
Dar Williams, when I went to UC Santa Cruz for my first 2 years of college, and that's where I started writing. And up until then, through high school, I listened to Cat Stevens and Joni Mitchell and sort of the classic folk singers, and I knew nothing. I didn't even know that a contemporary folk world existed until I went to college, and the first person I heard was Dar Williams, coincidentally, and a my roommate's friend came visiting from LA or something, and she had a Darrell Williams album, and I loved it, and I listened to it constantly. And so that was sort of neat that she was sort of what opened up the contemporary folk world to me. And so it was sort of neat to get to open for her.
What are you working on now?
I am working on, kind of desperately working on a new album.
Do you have a sample that you could give us of what will be coming on the new material?
Yeah, let's see. Okay. So this is a new tune that I wrote at some point after this album, my last album was recorded. And it will be on the next one. I could have been most anyone. I could have been my mother's son. It's a mystery how I came to be. I could have been my neighbor Jan, with seven kids in a minivan, or her brother Tim, but I was not him. I could have been Mr. T, wearing all gold jewelry. If I were Mr. T, you wouldn't mess with me.
I'm so glad you played that, because that song stood out when you opened for Darrell Williams, and I was at the concert, and I remembered that song, and just, it was delightful. I loved that thought of, could have been a lot of people, but I'm not. Yeah.
I actually wrote, that's a song I did right after my son was born, and it came out of the idea of, like, what, like, I just remember when I was pregnant thinking, like, who is this person going to be? It's like this whole unique person, like a completely new person. You know, it's like a complete stranger, yet he's like inside my body. Like, who is this? And so that's what made me think of this. Like, what are the odds that, like, we are who we are, that he became who he is? Like, he could have been anybody.
The very enthusiastic Emily Kern is a singer-songwriter living in Anchorage. Her next performance is Tuesday evening at Vagabond Blues in Palmer. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Brass in Fairbanks and Shane Iverson and Alice Criswell in Bethel. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Have a great weekend. Comfort in our thumb, so we stuck it in our mouth. And we wished we could go back to that place that only we knew, but we couldn't find the door. Still, the voice was so familiar, so we let her calm us down.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com.
This flu season, every Alaskan should roll up their sleeves and fight the flu by making plans to get both the swine flu and regular seasonal flu vaccines. In the meantime, you can fight the flu by regularly disinfecting hard surfaces, avoid touching your mouth, nose, and eyes, and wear a face mask if you are sick and in close contact with others. For more information on how to fight the flu, go to pandemicflu.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.